And we are back at 8:08. You're listening to KVON, the voice of Napa Valley. It's the morning show for Tuesday, June 26th. And the basics have been all okay so far today, the basics being traffic and weather and the markets. Weather forecast calls for the high to be about 80 with sunshine following our morning overcast. Right now it's 57. We're going to see it cooler tomorrow, then warming back up Thursday and Friday, and up to about 100 again by Saturday is the latest word. Traffic's been acceptable so far today. That's easy to say when you're not out in it, right? Solano County's had a few problems. The most recent 680 northbound Gold Hill Drive on-ramp, traffic hazard there. That looks pretty minor. And the markets, as mentioned a few minutes ago, is really kind of directionless so far today after the big losses yesterday. Looking for some kind of response, but I don't think we're seeing it yet. The Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ are all in plus territory, but only by small amounts, and there's no real clear direction on the markets today. Well, we're going to turn our attention away from the big Supreme Court decisions from earlier today and from Harley Davidson and from the primaries around the country and all that other stuff. And we're going to focus in hyperlocal on what's going on right here in good old Napa. And it's time now for our second in our series of city candidate profiles, city council candidate profiles. And we're happy to welcome into the show today Mary Luros. Mary, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for being here. Many years been having council candidates come in and do this. In fact, probably the first time I did it, you were in grade school.
That's a depressing way to start the conversation.
Would have been back, yeah. This is my nature. Yeah. So let's begin with something very fundamental, an easy question for me to ask, maybe difficult for some to answer, but why run for city council in Napa? What motivates you?
You know, right now I'm running because I look around Napa and I'm worried. I see friends having to move away because they can't afford to live here anymore. I see stores closing all the time because they can't afford the rent. I look around and I see beautiful hotels with very expensive room rates and amazing restaurants and stores that I can't afford to shop in. And I see an imbalance between what we provide for locals and what we provide for tourists. I'm running because I have the experience to understand how the city functions. I've been on the city council before. I understand what role the city council is supposed to play in this process. I have the skills as an attorney and as a business owner to do the work, to bring people together and to challenge the status quo head on. As a mom of a almost 4-year-old and an almost 7-month-old, I'm concerned about my kids' future. I want them to come back in Napa and live here. And I have a vision for what Napa could be. I'm committed to serving our community, especially our working families, and I don't see a lot of, I don't see them represented well on council right now.
Give us some of your background. I'm sure there are a lot of people in Napa who know your name but don't know anything about you. Where did you grow up? Tell us about your upbringing and what brought you to Napa in the first place.
Sure. So I grew up in a very, very small town, about 300 people, in a farming community just north of Sacramento in South Sutter County. My family's been farming there for 6 generations, farming walnuts. I was the first person in my family to go to college. And then I enjoyed school so much, I decided to go to law school. And the very first day of school, I met my future husband. And we, right after I took the bar exam in March of 2008, I moved to Napa. And so March 2008, I'm sure you remember, was not a great time to be looking for a job. Mm-hmm. So I got here and I didn't know anyone and I was looking for a job and no one was hiring because the economy was crashing. And I joined Kiwanis and I got into Leadership Napa Valley and my husband and I decided to start a law firm. And we actually just celebrated our 10th year in business last month. So that's how we got here. I currently serve on the board of Napa Sanitation District. I'm on the board of Napa Kiwanis. Very involved in the community. I didn't anticipate that I would be getting involved in politics so young. I'm 35 right now. But when my daughter was born in 2014 and then the earthquake happened a month later, I had one of those moments of, what am I waiting for? Why, if I want to do this, I should just do it now. And so right around the same time, Alfredo Pedroza had been appointed by the governor to be on the County Board of Supervisors, and there was an opening on city council. And so I decided I was going to apply for it. And 2 weeks later, I was on city council. And so it was sort of a crash course, and I just really enjoyed it. It was a good use of my skills. It was a great way to meet people in our community and help people. It was wonderful. So I would love the opportunity again, and that's kind of how I got here.
Mm-hmm. Some people might say, listening to this first few minutes, like, how could you possibly manage that workload? You described two young children, trying to run a law firm, your other commitments in the community, and you want more. How do you make that work?
You know, we prioritize things in life that we want to prioritize. I don't watch TV. I don't do the fun things that other people do. I work on weekends. I work every day. My husband and I work from home, which is really nice. We work for ourselves, so we're pretty flexible. I prioritize my kids and my work. And, you know, you make time for what you want to make time for. I don't Netflix and chill. I work all the time.
All right. Well, we need people like you, I guess, along with our Netflix and chill people. We need them too.
Not talking bad about Netflix. I love Netflix. I just don't have time for it.
Not that there's anything wrong with it. So let's focus in on some of these basic topics, and we'll cover these issues with every candidate, of course, starting with housing. Mm-hmm. We've seen a switch happen, and in fact, Pete Mott was here last week in our first profile series, and he referenced that the city does, as you know, annual surveys, like public sentiment mm-hmm. surveys, right track, wrong track kind of things. And for the first time over the last couple of years, traffic and the condition of streets has dropped below affordable housing. Mm-hmm. So that says something in and of itself. Mm-hmm. What that term means to people, affordable housing is always a question.
Exactly.
But what you referred to in your opening, that, you know, friends who have to move away because they can't afford to live here, that's one example of mm-hmm. it. We're not necessarily talking about low-income people.
Correct. Right? Yeah, it's not just affordable housing in the sense of, you know, government-mandated housing. It's cost of living. It's just being able to find a house that you can afford. It's mm-hmm. not spending more than half of your income on housing.
Mm-hmm. So the question obviously becomes, what can local government realistically do to address that issue?
So when I was on council, we did a lot. We made it a priority. We took some pretty big steps. I led the charge on making it easier to build second units, just as an easy way to pick up some units. We addressed enforcement of our vacation rental ordinance, which was a big deal. We committed to expanding our housing supply. We approved a lot of new units. We fast-tracked affordable housing projects, and we increased our in-lieu affordable housing fee. You know, unfortunately, I haven't been on the council in a couple of years now, and not a lot has happened since then. If I was elected, one of the first things I would do is create an inclusionary housing ordinance. It's a policy that basically requires housing developers to include a specified percentage of low or moderate income housing in a new residential development. So not only does it increase the number of affordable units that we have, but it integrates those units with market rate housing, which reduces some of the issues and the stigma that comes with having affordable housing projects. In addition to building more units, we also just need more money. It costs almost $500,000 to build one unit of affordable housing, which is crazy. Napa County has to compete for grant money to build these projects, and they're competing against other Bay Area counties, most of whom have housing bonds that generate money specifically for affordable housing. A lot of the grants require that your jurisdiction have matching funds. And quite frankly, now that redevelopment agencies are gone, we really don't have a reliable source of income that's just for affordable housing. As a result, we're missing out on those funding opportunities because we're just not competitive. I would say our lowest paid workers have the greatest need, and they're the most at risk when we have an economic tumble. And I think we're going to have an economic tumble soon, unfortunately. We need more protections. We need more advocates. We need people talking about this. And we need to empower people from, you know, marginalized communities to have a louder voice in our planning. I think our economic growth has been developing tremendously just in the 10 years that I've been here. And it's been generating a higher demand for housing. And now we're just not meeting the demand for housing. And you see really what's happening, especially in the hospitality industry right now. People aren't able to find employees. because, you know, we've had a housing crunch for so long that now we don't have employees, and now it's going to affect our economic development.
Mm-hmm. That gets us back into, you know, the subject that I felt like and said on the show a number of times, that the underlying issue behind Measure C for a lot of people was, have we gone too far on that economic development track, which includes, obviously, a lot of things that are outside of the city of Napa itself, but are certainly affecting the city's fortunes and the city's economy. And by that, we mean wineries and vineyards out in the county. What's your basic position on tourism development and hospitality? We've had this push and pull for so many years over it creates jobs, and yet the opposition side is, well, yes, but the jobs don't pay enough to live here, and so we create more commute traffic and so on and so forth. But the results are undeniable. We've seen this big change in 10 years that you're describing. So have we gone too far?
Yes and no. I mean, tourism is obviously an extraordinarily important thing in our economy. It generates something like $80 million in tax revenues through the county. But it's also really important that it provides over 13,000 jobs. The challenge is that we have to balance being a world-class destination with keeping that wonderful small town feel that we have in Napa that makes Napa special. And more importantly, we have to provide a good quality of life for all of our residents and make sure that those 13,000 people have a place to call home so that they're not stuck in traffic every day at 5 o'clock. Right now, I think we're not balancing those needs, and I think we're putting too much emphasis on tourism. And to some extent, we're catering to tourists instead of providing basic services for locals. And I think a really good example of that is our roads. We have plenty of money to fix our roads. Why are they such a mess?
That might come as a surprise to some people to hear there's plenty of money. Where is that money and where is it going instead of to roads?
Yeah, I mean, we have a lot of TOT money. As I mentioned, we have, you know, $80 million in tax revenues through the county from TOT. It goes to everything. It goes to fire. It goes to police. It goes to all of the different services that our city provides. A lot of it goes to salaries. We have Measure T money that's coming in for roads. I'm hopeful that that will be enough to fix our roads specifically. But we are in a very comfortable financial position as a city. We have money in reserves. We have good emergency funds. We're sitting pretty right now. And I think that a lot of that has to do with the fact that we've been preparing to borrow money for the Civic Center.
Let's get into that and talk in some detail about the Civic Center or New City Hall project. That'll be our next topic. We're going to come back after a very quick break here. It's our candidate profile series, and today it's Napa City Council candidate Mary Luros. We're back with more on KVON after this.
Hey, Mike, how's the house coming along?
Needs a ton of work. The pipes are leaking. Needs a new roof. The AC just broke. I just don't have time to do it all myself. You know anyone?
Oh, just ask Home Advisor. They match you with the best local pros for any home project.
Cool.
Yeah, you can read reviews and book appointments online.
What's it cost?
Actually, Home Advisor is always free to use.
Nice. I'll check it out.
Go to homeadvisor.com or download the free app.
Home Advisor.
I'm Diana Herr, and I work at PG&E in our Wildfire Safety Operations Center. As part of our commitment to keep our customers safe and following last year's wildfires, PG&E has established a state-of-the-art Wildfire Safety Operations Center to monitor the risk of wildfires and coordinate prevention and response efforts. The new Wildfire Safety Operations Center will be staffed around the clock during wildfire season with highly trained specialists ready to respond to wildfire threats. Our Operations Center is a critical part of our community wildfire safety program. The center will also partner with local communities, first responders, and California's Mutual Aid and Emergency Response Systems. With this new center, we can work even faster and better to protect our customers from the growing threats of extreme weather and wildfires. One more way that, together, we're building a better California.
St. Helena A&W Root Beer is currently looking for enthusiastic, friendly people who would like to join their team in serving delicious breakfast, lunch, and dinner while providing great customer service. $15 per hour full-time, start immediately. Apply at the A&W, 501 Main Street, St. Helena. Applications available at awrestaurants.com. And whether you are applying for that great next job or just thirsty, order one of their famous A&W root beer floats for only $1.99.
And we're back. It's 8:23. It's the Tuesday, June 26th, KVON Morning Show. I'm Barry Martin. In this segment of the program today, we are featuring Mary Luros, who is a candidate for Napa City Council in the upcoming fall elections. One by one, we will profile all six of the people who are running for the two available seats on the Napa City Council. Mary Luros, as you heard in the beginning of the program, was on the council for a short period of time following the appointment of Alfredo Pedroza to the Board of Supervisors and the sequence of events that left that open seat. And you were appointed, and was it 2 years you did?
Yep.
2 years on the council. And then you ran at that point, correct?
Yes.
But were not successful. What do you account, how do you account for that?
Yeah, it was a weird election. If you remember, it was the Trump election also. So we had in Napa County, we had a big surge of new voters. A lot of those new voters, you know, by the time they got to the end of the second page of their ballot, they were kind of, I don't want to say people didn't care anymore, but they maybe weren't as well informed as they were about some of the earlier ballot options. The person who I was running against is Doris Gentry. Doris is really well known in the community. She's been involved for a long time. She's run for office before, which I think is a big deal. And she just has better name recognition. So it was a good first campaign. I'm glad I did it. I got a lot of experience out of it. And it's really helped shape this second campaign.
In what way? What did you learn?
I learned a lot about just what the process is. I think people don't understand what it involves to run for office. And now, having just gone through it, you know, I know when to order lawn signs and what they should look like. And I have a list of donors that I can communicate with. I have a list of emails that I send emails to. I know more people. I know, you know, who the contacts are for different groups and things like that, that, you know, when you do it the first time, everything is new. So this time I feel like a regular.
A veteran now.
A veteran, yeah.
All right. So let's focus in on this new City Hall project, or Civic Center, as it's come to be called. It's been, you know, many years in the making. And while the conversation might have been going on when you first came to town, as you were describing, 2009 or so, the economy was not in the right place for any proposition like that, no matter whether you have a 50 or 60 or 1,000-year-old city hall. When the economy's bad, you're not even going to discuss it. Things started to get better. We saw the downtown start to really grow and aggressively, and properties were changing hands, and that's when it suddenly became the idea that there could be this complex land swap kind of deal that would create funding for the city to build a new city hall or civic center, consolidate some offices and so on. And it has become very complicated for the average voter to understand.
Yeah, that's the perfect word for it. Complicated. Yeah. Complex.
And I think I mentioned last week in our first candidate profile that the timing is not ideal. This is the kind of a thing that a municipality wants to do outside of an election period, not during a time when people are campaigning, because it becomes an issue. And it's become an issue here. Absolutely, in this race, and will be more so over the next few months. So let's start from the basics. Are you in favor of what the city is proposing at this point?
I am in favor of consolidation. When this project first came up, it was a great opportunity for us to consolidate, you know, all the city buildings in the downtown area. I thought it was a great project that could provide, you know, good, well-paying jobs and affordable housing and some of our priorities. I don't like how complex it's become, and I don't support how complex it has become.
Mm-hmm. How could it be simpler?
Well, you know, instead of keeping the project simple and focused, the city, you know, they brought in a private developer. They gave them a long list of things to accomplish. The first thing on the list should have been, let's do this if we have enough money to do it, let's keep money, you know, the cost in mind. But it seems like the list is just a laundry list of things that are just being included in regardless of cost. Originally, the plan was to build a new city hall, and then we added a police station in the same building. Then we moved it to another block so that we could put up a hotel on the current site to help pay for the project. And we're going to have to build out temporary offices while we wait. So that's the swing space on the Health and Human Services campus. We're going to have to build out a temporary police station now over on Jefferson. And then we added a new fire department, which means we have to build a temporary fire department also. Then instead of consolidating, which was the point of all of this, we're actually going to expand the square footage of office space that we have. And then we had to add a 271-space parking garage on Clay Street. And then to make the affordable housing advocates like me happy, they added 100 residential units. And then to keep the locals happy, they added a grocery store. And then they added a restaurant. And then they added a bar. And while everyone's head is spinning, trying to keep up with what's involved in what has become a very complex project, the costs of construction have gone way up. In fact, when I was on city council just a couple years ago, staff told us it was going to be a $50 million project. Every time I hear about the project, the price goes up. It went up to $100 million, and then it was $110, and the last I heard, it's going to be about $120 million, and that's just for City Hall. That's not what's happening on the Superblock site. Personally, I don't think we need another hotel in that block. I don't think we need a restaurant and a bar. I don't think we need to move the fire department. And I just don't think we need this project to be so big if all we're trying to do is build a new City Hall.
And yet, as a devil's advocate, all of that complexity is there because of the desire to leverage the value of the property and use the revenue from a hotel, the TOT from a hotel, as you know, and so on and so forth. And the case is made that the complexity is what makes it work, and so that the burden is not on the taxpayer.
Yeah, but we don't pay for buildings like that. We don't put up a fire station in Browns Valley and say, we're going to put up a hotel on the other side of town, and the TOT from that hotel is going to pay for the fire station in Browns Valley. That's not how we pay for projects. We borrow money, and it comes out of the general fund. That's how it gets paid off. And that's how this project is going to get paid off. There's all these crazy financials involved in this project to make it work. I just think it's unnecessary. I don't think we need to go through all of this. If we're going to build a city hall, let's as a community decide where a good place for that would be. Let's do it right. Let's borrow the money, knowing that it is a big obligation, and pay for it the way we pay for everything else.
We'll take a break now. Mary Luros, our guest, it's the council candidate profile segment, and we'll come back in a few minutes with more right here on KVON. 8:31 right now.
I'm Nate Campbell, updating you on some news stories from our KVON newsroom. Firefighters continue their battle against the Pawnee Fire up in Lake County. Hundreds of structures remain threatened. Dozens have already burned. Thousands of residents have been evacuated. Still not much containment on that fire. Governor Brown has declared a state of emergency for Lake County. Noreen Evans told Barry Martin that the SB 1088 bill is a wildfire tax and would pass the cost of wildfires onto taxpayers rather than maintaining them as a responsibility of PG&E. Senator Bill Dodd sees his bill differently.
What we've been trying to do is to simply put a framework in so that we can harden our grid. In other words, all these fires that happened throughout Northern California, and we're going to find out the fires that happened in Southern California as well, were ignited by our electrical grid. We're using old technology. We need to upgrade so that our grid no longer creates these big problems. Depending upon what happened, how the Tubbs fire is categorized, this could be a $15 billion hit for the industrial utility. In this case, it's PG&E. But my bill makes it very, very clear. If there is any negligence whatsoever, that an investor-owned utility is not going to be able to recover from the ratepayers.
Dodd says some of the costs may need to become socialized and paid for by the state of California. The city of Napa and Napa County have an informational workshop coming up on creating a rental unit on your property in the city or county. Learn how you can be part of the affordable housing solution and earn additional income by adding a dwelling unit within your existing single-family residence. It's 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. on Monday, July 16th at the City of Napa Senior Center Social Hall, 1500 Jefferson Street. Napa in the North Bay, you are up to date. I'm Nate Campbell. That's the news.
Hey, boys, Summer Basketball League gets underway tonight. This is a Sports Minute with Ira C. Smith. Steve Ball, the basketball coach at Napa Valley College, is the coordinator for the program of high school teams that will be playing summer basketball. Starts at 5 o'clock tonight when St. Helena takes on the Hanna Boys Center. Calistoga will be playing at the 6 o'clock game tonight. Chardonnay Golf Club will be hosting a qualifying coming up on Thursday, July 5th. This is a drive, chip, and punt national championship for boys and girls ages 7 to 15. This is one of 11 local qualifiers hosted by the Northern California section of the PGA. Napa Silverado's playing tonight and tomorrow night at Sonoma against the Stompers. 5:45 airtime for the broadcast on KVON with the 6 o'clock first pitch on both nights. The A's are at Detroit. The Giants are home to Colorado. Here is Janice Clifton from Abbey Carpets.
I started the business 29 years ago. I purchased it from one of my clients. All this time, we've been in the same location right behind Walmart. I have a great group of people working for me. They are all the sales staff are non-commissioned. Many of them have been with me 25 years and more, so we have a good group. We're kind of like family because we've been together so long. We do very small jobs up to very large commercial jobs to custom building. Right now, our most asked for products are ceramic tiles, stone, and hardwood.
At Nissan, we just made your choice for a new car an easier one than ever. With our most exciting and fuel-efficient lineup, the choice is yours. Now, get great offers across our full line. Shop at your local Nissan store today and choose Nissan.com.
And we're back on KVON at 8:35. It's the morning show for Tuesday, June 26th, and I'm Barry Martin. Markets are in about the same position they were last time we checked. Minor gains on all three of the major indices. No real clear direction so far today. And on the traffic beat, nothing new for the North Bay. Looks like all the problems have shifted into more central parts of the Bay Area. Now it's typical on a Tuesday morning commute. So not much to worry about here in Napa, Solano, and Sonoma counties. Weather-wise, it's another pleasant day. Not too hot today. High of about 80. After the morning overcast clears, we'll see lots of sunshine. And the weather pattern for this week is going to be a little cooler tomorrow and then warming up on Thursday and then more warming Friday and Saturday. So by Friday, we're above 90. By Saturday, we're near 100 again. And then we'll have a quick drop again on Sunday, they tell us, back down to the mid-80s and a cooler start to next week. So a little warmer, a little cooler. Summer pattern is certainly working in our favor here in the wine country right now. Time is 8:36. In this hour, we're talking with Mary Luros, candidate for Napa City Council in the upcoming November elections. Once we made it past the June primary, we shifted our attention on the show to our council candidates, and one by one, we will have each of the six on the air solo, and then perhaps later on, get closer to the election, we'll have some group get-togethers, some melees.
Ooh.
Right now, Mary Luros solo here. We're talking about basic issues, and we left off the topic of the City Hall or new Civic Center project, but there's more to discuss on that topic. You expressed to me off the air that you don't feel that the city has been transparent in how they're communicating about it.
Yeah, so there's really two big issues. I talked earlier about the scope. I think the scope is obviously a big thing that we should all be paying attention to, since you and I and everybody who's listening is paying for this project. But the other issue is transparency. I don't think that the city has done a very good job of communicating this project to people. I think that we as a community need to be paying attention to this project. It's probably the biggest project like this that's ever happened, and we're about to go into extreme debt to pay for it. The city seems to want to kind of just get it done without people paying attention, which I think is unfortunate. There are a lot of things that they could be doing to get the word out, and I'm just not seeing that, and it's really unfortunate. I've spoken up at city council meetings in the past about this topic, and I've sat down with some of the leaders within the city and tried to get them to do more things to get the word out. They have been going to more community groups, different meetings, and trying to explain the project. The problem is every time they try to explain the project, it's so complex that people still don't get it. You know, I've heard the presentation so many times, and every time I hear it, I have a new question. It's just really hard to wrap your head around. So I would recommend to people, there is a website that's set up specifically to explain the project. I would recommend that you take a look at it. It's www.napaciviccenter.com. They had some problems updating it. I haven't looked at it recently, so I don't know if they've been updating it as well. But that's where you go for all of the information. I would love to see the city put together a committee of people to work on this from the community, because I think that's really what's missing from this project is community input. It feels like they don't want community input. It feels like they want to just have plenary, the developer, present a project and rubber stamp it and make it happen, which is really unfortunate. This is a big project for our community, and I think people need to be involved in it.
Mm-hmm. So if the proposal as it currently exists isn't the answer, can you give us more detail on what you think is a better approach?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think we need a new fire department. I think that that is unnecessary. The reasoning behind doing that was to create the most value for the Superblock site so that when they do sell it, well, it's complicated because plenary is technically buying it, but they want to get the most value as possible from that. Point.
In other words, the whole block is available, not just a portion.
Correct, yeah. I don't think that it's necessary to move the fire department. I don't think it's even necessary to have the police station and the civic center in the same building. To me, that sounds like a really bad idea. There are no other cities or jurisdictions who have that in a vertical building. Sometimes you'll see a police station next to a city hall, and that, you know, that's fine. You can make that work. But having it in one vertical building, to me, seems like a really bad design. I think if we're going to build a new police station, great, let's build a new police station, but let's do that as a separate project and put the time and thought into it and the money into it that it needs and deserves. And let's do it right. Let's not just try and throw it in here so that we can pay for it through this, you know, other project. I don't think we need the fourth story on the Civic Center. Right now, the design is that there's a fourth story that's extra, that's going to be empty, that they can then rent out to people if they want to, so that they can expand in the future. I think that's totally unnecessary. Why are we doing that? We're supposed to be consolidating, not expanding. I also think that the parking garage, the expansion of the Clay Street parking garage, is unnecessary. It's an unnecessary expense. And if you can't park the project, that means the project is not in the right location. Hmm. So there's a lot of little problems. If you're familiar with the project, it doesn't take long to make a list of things that you don't like.
Mm-hmm. Clearly, it felt like, does feel like, there's a window of opportunity for something like this in the way it's currently formulated, in the complicated involvement of the private sector and the development of hotel and retail and all these other things, is only possible when the window of economic opportunity is open. And what we've seen with many projects, perhaps most notably the formerly Ritz-Carlton project on 3rd Street at Silverado Trail, the project was entitled, it was all ready to go, but then the economy turned and no one was interested in it for many years, and now it's gotten into this, I don't know, netherland for a while. I'm sure that there are concerns the same thing is going to happen with this one, and you're feeling that maybe they're trying just to move it on quickly has something to do with that, because when the economy shifts and we slip back into recession, all the interest in this project will go away, won't it?
Well, there's definitely a feeling that this is being rushed through. I don't know if it's because of the economy and the cost of construction. I think that that's one reason, but I certainly feel that it is being pushed through quickly. There's been an outcry from the community to hit the pause button on this and work together on it, and the city has ignored that.
All right. So you envision there could be a process in a more traditional way where bonds are issued, debt is incurred, you build that city hall or civic center project with no complication, with no involvement of the private sector? Is that the way you're thinking of it?
I mean, it could be. I think the most important thing is to have more community input so that we can make that decision together as a community instead of just having a laundry list of things that we give to a developer and have them figure it all out. I'd like to see the community involved in making that decision about what it looks like.
Mm-hmm. All right. Let's shift our focus a little bit to business in general as a focus point. Over many, many years, we've seen local retailers, locally based small business, craving a little bit bigger piece of the tourism pie, right? Mm-hmm. I remember back to my earliest days in the 80s here, local business people saying, there's all these fish are in the sea of Highway 29, and that sea doesn't intersect with the city of Napa. How do we get them into town, right?
Yeah.
And that eventually happened. Now we see incredible amounts of foot traffic and activity and great business growth downtown, which then has this unintended consequence of making it more difficult for small business to pay the rents. There have been some notable stories of people fighting to stay in business, basically, where the rents are rising. Mm-hmm. What can you say and what do you say to people, local small business people?
Yeah, so one of the big issues that you're talking about is economic diversity. In Napa, we don't have diversity. We have everything is related to the wine industry for a large part. A few years ago, I worked with a group of local community leaders to look into starting a business incubator in Napa. Our idea was that we would come up with some way of encouraging businesses that were not related to the wine industry or the hospitality industry to get some tech going in Napa, because we're actually a really good place to start some of those businesses. We're close to a few universities. We have an airport. We have, a nice quality of life for our residents and things like that. What we discovered through the process, though, is that attracting businesses is important. But the first priority really is retaining and supporting local businesses. And the way that we do that as a city is by creating the policy environment where businesses can be successful on their own. There are things that the city can control, and there are things that we can control. We can support. So the city really can't make a landlord charge less for rent. But they can work on beautification of the city to draw people in, to get that foot traffic like you were talking about. They can develop tax incentives, helping attract and support skilled employees, which is really a challenge right now. We're having a very hard time, especially in the hospitality industry, of attracting and keeping employees who can, afford to live here. And even, basic things like allowing A-frame signs. I know that was a big issue a few years ago. You're sad because I think you were working for the city at that time.
I saw it happen before I worked for the city, and then again while I was working for the city. Sure.
Yeah, silly things like that. We can control obvious things like permit fees and business license fees, but we also control things like the downtown specific plan, which really acts like a tool to make our city a brand and attracts people to come in and spend money. And it's been, I think the downtown specific plan has been very successful in doing that. One of the biggest problems I would say local businesses face right now is getting the skilled employees that they need. As I mentioned earlier, I've just celebrated 10 years in business with my husband. We have a really hard time finding attorneys to work for us. We've had several, but it's really hard to find somebody who can come here with their spouse and their spouse or partner needs to have a job too, and finding a job for them and finding housing that they can afford. It's just really tough. And I think the way that we change that is by supporting training and apprenticeship programs and really putting money into attracting employees. And housing them, which is really crucial. I think that one thing that people tend to forget is that local businesses aren't just retail and restaurants. We have locally owned grocery stores and electricians and plumbers and doctors, and it's not just the downtown core that we always talk about. We have businesses all over the city, in office buildings and in homes. People forget about, people like me who work from home. As a city, I think we need to attract employees with the right skills to fit our jobs. We need to support and retain our local businesses, and we need to attract new businesses.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned the business incubator project. Mm-hmm. That's been 5 years since that began?
No, it's been, longer? I think, a little bit longer, 7 or 8
years,
something like that.
It's always longer than I think it will be.
Back when I was in grade school.
Mm-hmm, exactly. What's been the result? Has there been a beneficial result from that Napa incubator project?
Yes. I mean, we had buy-in from the City of Napa, the City of American Canyon, and the county. Each of those three jurisdictions put in $10,000 to pay for a business plan. And we had the business plan created, and it was actually really helpful for us to see, after talking with all the stakeholders and all the people involved and, you know, interviewing a ton of people and doing the research, we really have an opportunity in Napa to spur businesses that are technology businesses but are still involved in hospitality. So, you know, wine technology, food technology, there's a lot of opportunity out there, and we would actually be a good spot for that. Ultimately, we were not able to use the building that we were trying to get into. We were trying to get into the JAL building at that time, and it ended up not working out. But I think that there are opportunities right now where we could possibly pick up the project again and get it started, and there's interest in doing that. So we're not out yet.
Let's shift our focus over to the general plan update. Mm-hmm. And I guess one, you know, fundamental thing that I should probably ask every candidate for city office is, do you support the RUL as a good starting point?
Yes, I do support the RUL. I think that the deal that we made with our residents, with the county, is that if we, as we grow as a community, the growth needs to happen within the city. That is what makes Napa special. That's what builds our tourism industry. It's why 3.5 million people come here a year. And it's up to us as a city to grow and support our residents and provide a good quality of life within the city limits. That doesn't mean that every parcel within the city, within the RUL, should be developed. But it does mean that we need to take on the load from the county.
Yeah. What that's caused, of course, for the city, there's always some negative to any positive step. And the positive was it kept our city from sprawling, mm-hmm. and it's protected agriculture and the rural quality of life. The negative side of that is density. And we have both residential and business density of a kind we haven't had in the past, and we have traffic density we haven't had in the past. So as we go into this general plan update, what do you think, what would you be looking at as most important? What do you think the citizenry should be paying attention to? General plan only gets updated once every 10 years. 20 years, yeah. Sorry, and then there's a 10-year interval update, mm-hmm. right? So it's a long-term process that we are then sort of bound to once we get through that. You know, the general plan amendment mm-hmm. Is a difficult thing. It doesn't happen very often. So whatever that general plan becomes, we're supposed to live with it, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's the idea. The idea is that we come together as a community and we map out what we want the next 20 years to look like. And for the most part, we stick to that. I think there's been something like 70 general plan amendments since the last plan. So that's not terrible for 20 years. Mm-hmm. I think the most important things that we should be discussing in the general plan are housing, of course. We need to be taking a really good look at each parcel that we have within the city. You know, what's available? What does the city own? What does the county own? What does the Napa Sanitation District own? What does the flood control project own? And can we use those properties for housing? And what do we want that to look like? Do we want it to be dense housing? I think that we have some opportunity to go up. We as a community have struggled with going up, and I think we have to go up to avoid going out. So I'd like to see some changes allowed so that we can do that and have some, you know, mixed use retail, commercial, and residential. Mm-hmm. I think that makes for a good quality of life, a good walking environment, especially in the downtown area. So housing, of course, is number one, but also we're never going to have enough housing for everyone who wants to live here, because we're a pretty amazing place. So we need to really look at our traffic congestion as we revitalize the downtown area, as Napa Pipe gets closer to reality. We really need to address the increase in traffic congestion and provide a transportation system that can accommodate the needs not only of our residents, but of our visitors. We have, I mentioned before, 3.5 million people coming every year to visit Napa, and our roads are designed to accommodate our residents. That's how we get funding. So we're really at a disadvantage there. We also have increasing traffic problems because people can't afford to live here. And we have a road, you know, road system, like I said, that wasn't built to support the level of economic activity that we have here. You look at all the people who have to drive into and out of work every day during peak hours, and we're just not built for that level of service. So I think those are really the two big issues. The third, I would say, is just, I would say, generally innovation. I think we have an opportunity as a well-funded city to look at some innovative ways of dealing with all of this. And instead of doing what other cities do and copying what other people do, we could take the reins on some of these things. I've been excited about the general plan meetings. The city has had two now where they've talked about some kind of innovative ideas for just to kind of get the conversation started about what we could be doing as a city. And I think that's really exciting. I think we need to be looking not just 20 years out, but 50 years out. And, you know, what is the community going to look like? Are we all going to be in cars? Are we going to be in automated, you know, autonomous driver cars? Are we going to be using Uber? Are we going to want to live in big homes? Are we going to want to live in smaller homes? Are we going to want to live with other people or live on our own? We need to be thinking long term.
Yeah, and it's kind of, to be honest, and divert just a second, 40 years ago, let's say, you know, what would that be, 1978?
It was negative 5.
40 years ago, when you're talking about a 20-year planning horizon, things weren't changing as rapidly then, mm-hmm. you know? The difference between 1968 and 1988 in terms of technology, kind of minor. Today, I mean, is 20-year planning even realistic? Should we be looking at 5 and 10-year planning cycles mm-hmm. because of the pace of change?
Yeah, I mean, I have a 4-year-old daughter who yesterday I picked her up from school and she had a piece of paper and she said, "This is my iPhone," and then she used it to call her grandma. So that's kind of, you know, what we need to be thinking about is, you know, what are our kids going to be doing? I actually took her to the library a couple months ago, and the library has a computer set up, and she wanted to play on it, and she went and touched the monitor, and she was like, "Why doesn't this work?" And I said, "Because you have to use the mouse." And she looked at me like, "What's a mouse?" Mm-hmm. Because she's used to using iPads and iPhones. She had no idea. So we need to think that way. We need to think differently. It's mm-hmm. not, this is the way we've always done it. That's the worst kind of planning that we could possibly be doing.
Yeah. What is it that we think is important today that will be irrelevant in 10 years?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It's a simple thing, but I remember when we were talking about the Dwight Murray Plaza project when I was on city council, and we were talking about getting rid of the cutout where the bus stop is right mm-hmm. in the front there. And I said, please don't do that. You need that because we need a place for Uber drivers to drop people off in the middle of town. And everybody looked at me like I had horns coming out of my head. Like, what? Uber? Huh? And this was a couple years ago. Mm-hmm. But now Uber, everybody uses Uber. And there's really not a safe place downtown for people to get dropped off because our roads weren't designed that way. So we just need to be thinking about that kind of thing. You know, it's not just a big giant parking garage. It's how do we accommodate, you know, this sharing economy that we've developed. Mm-hmm.
Very interesting and good conversation with Mary Luros, who has been our guest this hour in our candidate profile series. Give you about a minute for a summary.
Sure. Well, I said before I'm running for city council because I'm worried about our city. Having worked for the past decade with families and businesses and individuals in Napa, I truly understand what the challenges are that our community faces, and I have real solutions. I have the passion, experience, and skills to do the job, and I look forward to earning your vote.
And there you have it. Thank you for being here today. And as I mentioned earlier, we'll have hopefully some, I like to not use the word debate because that's an actual formal word that has a meaning, but a conversation among all the candidates, hopefully here on the show at some point down the road.
I look forward to that. Thank you for having me.
Find a bigger room with more chairs.
Yeah, we're not going to fit in here.
All right. That's it for the KVON Morning Show for today. I'm Barry Martin. Thanks for tuning in. 3 minutes before 9 o'clock, and coming up next, it's Judd Finkelstein with a big Judd radio show that follows these important messages. I'll talk to you tomorrow.
Happy Hour is getting better at Napa Valley Wine Train, putting beer before Bordeaux and cans before corks. Hop Train Happy Hour is every Monday featuring local craft beers made with the same care as the region's finest wines and gourmet pub grub, all while enjoying a 2+ hour rail tour of Napa Valley on the open air car. Train departs at 5:45 p.m. Locals pay just $50. Limited offer. Get your tickets at winetrain.com using booking code LHNS.
Valid for Napa and Sonoma County residents. Restrictions apply.
Stars, Stripes, and Freedom are in the air this 4th of July celebration at Oxbow Commons from 5 to 10 p.m. This is Big Rick Stewart from 99.3 The Vine, and I will be your MC. The Kids Zone will keep the youngsters busy with free carnival.